the Wizards, who were busy over the weekend, adding another very young player to their roster. Ben Standig is with us every Monday and Friday at 12 at Ben Standig on Twitter. And Last Man Standig is his podcast. And, you know, I guess we'll just start with, I mean, I talked about it earlier. It's like this is what we're going to get until the contract is signed, unless we get a bombshell like, you know, Terry's requesting, you know, permission to seek a trade. And I don't see that coming. But Jeremy Fowler, I guess, over the weekend said, you know, as many people have said, the contract negotiations between Terry McLaurin and the team are not going well. And he will just keep asking each other this question until a deal is signed. Is there any reason to be any more concerned, which we weren't the last time we spoke about that? Has that changed for you?
Nope. I'm not going to pretend that I've talked to all the principals involved since we spoke last and got their insight and all that, but you know, all the reports are all essentially the exact same thing and have been from the start, which is to say that, you know, it's you know, apparent that the people are talking to folks on the player side of this, which is, you know, fine. But, you know, we're not hearing that the team is, you know, like, you know, we haven't heard the team is grumbling because they think, you know, that they can with Jaden Daniels, they don't need to pay necessarily for a top shelf receiver because he can make more with less, or that Terry, you know, we've talked before about, you know, not that he's old, but, you know, he's going to be 30 this year. And for NFL purposes, that starts to get into a little questionable area past that if you're signing a multi-year deal. So unless we start hearing some more specifics overall, I have a hard time getting worked up over this in terms of it being an issue. But like I said all along, you know, get me to a day or so before training camp. And if there's still nothing there, then, you know, then I'll start to be a little more concerned. But, you know, for now, you know, I totally get why we're all talking about it, but I just, you know, I would just say hang in there for now. And, you know, again, also all these guys are on some kind of vacation to a varying degree. And not that you can't negotiate contracts from a beach, but, you know, they're all getting away a little bit. So, you know, I think you got to factor that in as well.
Yeah, you know, I wonder how much of it is there's really a major divide, a major, you know, difference in what Terry wants and what they're willing to pay, or if it's just, well, this is the way Adam Peters and Lance Newmark, et cetera, this is the way they prefer to do it. They may think that, you know, a lot of people think that there's always benefit in waiting, you know, until you can't wait anymore to get a deal done. That kind of pressure put on the, you know, the other side ultimately benefits the team. I mean, it has not worked for Jerry Jones in recent years. They extended Sam Cosmi. I looked this up over the weekend. Not that they had to extend Sam Cosmi, even though I'm sure he was probably, you know, interested in an extension, but they didn't extend him until early September, right before the regular season started last year, when they gave him the four-year, I think it was $75 million deal. I looked at it over the weekend. I think it was $75 million. But, you know, I wonder how much of it is, yeah, we just don't see that number, Terry, and we're not budging off of our number versus, yeah, we're going to get there. We just, you know, everybody's away. We'll come back, and this is our latest offer, but, you know, let's talk towards the end of the month or something. It's because it's their style. We don't know what their style really is yet in terms of negotiating extensions for star players.
Yeah, no, I think that while I understand everybody's a little concerned and a little bit nervous, all this, it does provide the opportunity to see more of how Adam Peters, et cetera, will handle their business. And I don't think that's a bad outcome. I mean, it's going to happen at some point, you know, at some point you're going to have these issues. So again, I don't see it being a concern yet. You know, I mean, from the team perspective also, look, Terry still has a year left on his deal. They can always, even if he gets to a point says, the heck with this, I don't want to even sign an extension anymore, I'll just play it out. They can still use the franchise tag the following year if they so choose. So the team has a lot of a lot of advantages. I mean, could he hold out? I mean, sure, but that's, it's still 20-something million, right, that he's on for this year. So, I don't think he's throwing that away. And in order to get another deal, you're going to have to, have another good year. So, I do think, if nothing else, we do get to see a little bit into how the team will handle their business going forward, just the way we do with, the drafts and roster building. This is, there's not nearly as many opportunities for this insight, which is a good thing. I think it's, from that perspective, from the education perspective, this is not a bad scenario for us who are interested in how they're going to conduct business.
I've and you've probably gotten the same thing from, just correspondence, whether it's on Twitter or email or whatever, from people saying they've got to treat Terry right. This is wrong with what they're doing. I would say that it is not time to take sides in this. It's time to take sides if it actually becomes a legitimate holdout. And I don't consider, missing minicamp, mandatory minicamp, as a legitimate holdout. I would say a legitimate holdout starts in training camp. So if we both agree on that, if it got to that, majority of the side taken by fans would be with whom? Terry or the organization?
Well, that's the other part here that's interesting, right? Because at this stage, Adam Peters, et cetera, can do no wrong. It's, in Adam we trust, and based on what happened so far, it's a reasonable take, it's a reasonable position to take. On the other hand, other than Jaden Daniels, Terry McLaurin is easily, I would say, the most popular player on the team, maybe even to some degree more than Jaden. I mean, maybe that's not fair, but he's been here the longest, and he's been the figure that everybody holds up to say, hey, we got to do, this is what we need more of, this guy. So, I think to some degree it'll ultimately probably the team, but Terry's going to be maybe the rare case where it's like, boy, what are you doing here? This is the guy, you guys just got here 10 minutes ago. He's been here since 2019. And I think the other thing is, not just from the outside perspective, but the internal perspective of fear of the players, if Terry McLaurin, who is, held up again as the guy you want to emulate on the field, the field, then if you're not giving this guy a deal, if you're playing really hardball with him, what does that mean for the rest of us down the line? And, I think that's the other part that has to get navigated here, maybe even more so than, any sort of public perception, because you need to, keep your locker room happy, keep everything positive, and, I don't see Terry, even if he didn't get a deal coming in and, blowing up the place. But on the other hand, you're aware, you see it. And I'm sure they all talk on the side. So, that's the important other important part of this.
Yeah, I was looking for, because I've gotten a bunch of them, but basically there have been various people that have said, if they don't take care of Terry, I'm out, or this would be, an egregious mistake. Like, I don't know, personally, I'm giving Adam Peters and company the benefit of the doubt. And I said right from the beginning, when we had the first report about the two sides being far apart, that this is a tricky extension because of age and because of just kind of, the idea of where Terry ranks. But I think your point's the most important point, and that is they shouldn't care, and I would hope they couldn't care less about which side the fans would take, which of the two sides the fans would take in the event you got to a holdout. It should be more about what the response from the locker room and even, players, prospective players down the road around the league, because you don't want to, in your first big contract extension with a star player who is also a star off the field, you don't want to end up looking bad in how that is handled. That's where the tricky part, it's another layer to why this isn't the easiest thing in the world, but that's more important than which side the fans would take. I just think it's interesting to consider, what if we're into preseason game number 2 and there's still a holdout and you're getting reports that they're not close. This is going to be a take sides situation in August.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, look, obviously that definitely could happen. We see it, you know, around the league, you know, every year there's always something like this. And, you know, even right now, you know, you've got the Trey Hendrickson situation with the Bengals. You got T.J. Watt. You know, Micah Parsons hasn't reached contentious levels, but he's still waiting to get an extension and so on. So, yeah, no, I mean, these things happen. And, you know, it's always more titillating to watch it from the outside when it's not your team, you're getting to watch somebody else potentially implode and so on. But yeah, it's you know, it is a business that they got to figure these things out. But yeah, nothing has happened yet where I be like, oh boy, you know, this is the concern, and everything seems to be reasonable. And like we said, if nothing else, we get to see how they want to conduct business. You know, look, I mean, look at like Jerry Jones. I'm not saying remotely what he's doing makes sense. The way he constantly delays all of his all the signings, and you know, seems to wait too long. But okay, now we've seen it enough to know this is how Jerry Jones wants to do things. The Bengals are typically an organization that is being viewed as cheap, and then there's other ones that I don't know one off the top of my head, but we're you know, like the Eagles are, you know, fairly proactive. Like that Saquon Barkley was like, you know, under a contract, and they said, okay, we're going to rip this thing up and give you a better one because you were just that great, and we, you know, value you going forward and so on. So, I do think, again, I understand people want to just get it over with, but I do think it's a valuable exercise that we're going to get to witness here.
When was the last, like, you know, you and I talked about recently the fact that this is an off season without any conversation about quarterback, you know, other than where does Jaden rank, you know, and that's been a debate. But there's no, you know, daily debate about, you know, who the quarterback should be or did they handle it right. When's the last time we had a real contract situation? It's Kirk, really, in terms of it creating great drama within the fan base. You know, John Allen or Daron Payne, I mean, these weren't big dramas. We haven't had a, correct me if I'm wrong, we haven't had a big contract drama around here since 2017.
Well, there was the Trent Williams situation.
Oh, true. Yeah.
I mean, that one also had to do with he just, you know, couldn't stand the organization for how they treated him. But ultimately, I'm sure if they had given him, you know, the money that he felt he earned, that probably gets over some bad feelings. But that was certainly a rough one. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I guess Terry's extension three, you know, summers ago was a big source of conversation. I mean, everybody was, you know, in agreement that they wanted Terry McLaurin to be re-signed. And by the way, thank God Jason Wright flew back into town to nail down the deal. We're certainly thrilled that happened, because it probably wouldn't have happened without it. What are you talking about football team-wise these days since the last time we talked, which is a week ago?
You know, I haven't been doing as much monologuing, I would say, the last few episodes, and instead having, like, I had you on a couple weeks ago and had Ross Tucker on the other day, and it's more just like, okay, give me your opinion. How do you see the world? You know, because at least if nothing else, I'm on, not the inside in terms of the organization, but I'm there, you know, every day and looking at it from that perspective. But for everybody else who's on the outside, what's your view? And, you know, I think it gets interesting in talking to Ross, who's obviously a former offensive lineman, and I kind of just said to him, and he's also does a lot of work involving the Eagles now. So I was like, you know, we're talking about the gap between these teams and how do you think Washington's done. And one thing he was bringing up was, you know, the Laremy Tunsil situation, that, look, obviously he's a very good player, but, you know, the amount of penalties he had last year, primarily for, you know, false starts.
Was, yeah, he had a bunch of false starts. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty staggering.
Led the league easily.
You know, yeah.
I think,
you know,
two out of the last 3 years.
Yeah, I think that's right. So, you know, that it's like, okay, sure, we can say he's a great pass blocker and that's better than what they had. They had to do that and all that. But, you know, penalties are problematic, and these are, you know, they can be drive killers, as we know. For sure. So, you know, what's going on with that? And then also, you know, to that end, you know, why did Houston decide that,
right,
even though they have their own young quarterback in C.J. Stroud, like, why did they decide to move on from a guy who's been a pillar for them? So, you know, he wasn't throwing cold water on it. But, like, at the same point, I do think it's a fair question. You know, all the guys that they added, you know, the last three big trades they made, essentially, the Lattimore, Samuel, and Tunsil, none of them are clean situations. I mean, they all have legitimate questions to them. And, you know, Tunsil, again, they you know, I think they had to upgrade the line. There just was literally no offensive tackle this year in free agency. And, you know, they were picking 29. They obviously did draft a tackle in Josh Connerly, but you can't know what's going to happen there. And even still, that's just a rookie now you're putting in there, you know. So all that said, I totally understand why they did the Tunsil trade. But, yeah, there are some questions to still ask. And, you know, I think looking at some specifics like that is kind of all there is to do at this point because, you know, other than Terry, everything seems to be fairly set. So, you know. There's only so much we can talk about in any real way.
What did Wale say on Cam Newton's podcast, or what did Cam Newton say to Wale over the weekend about RG3 and the comparison to Jaden Daniels?
Let me pull it up real quick because I don't want to butcher the
okay,
quote.
Let's listen to that. Ben and I can talk about that for a sec.
Sure, here, let me, it's from at Jay Daniels MVP. Here is the quote.
Potential one-hit wonder.
Nah.
What makes him different?
Oh, boy.
What happened there?
I pulled it up on, you know, not on Twitter, okay. On the native
but the,
browser.
The idea was that Cam Newton basically asked Wale, who's a, you know, big Washington fan, as most of you know, if Jaden Daniels is a one-hit wonder. This is what we talked about, by the way, the other day. Just this idea of, you know, have we crowned him too early? Ben, I don't think I asked you that question. We, on the day before July 4th, which would have been Thursday of last week, we had somebody essentially say, you guys have crowned Jaden Daniels too early. You know, we can get into what that means, but I think the overly optimistic idea, or the very optimistic idea that what we saw last year was not a one-year wonder. It was not an aberration. It's what we're going to see every year. What do you say to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing I've been saying is that I have to sort of check myself at times.
Right.
Not just because, sure, it's the case. It's only been 1 year. I mean, you know, we've plenty of rookie of the years in sports who've, you know, never reached those, you know, kind of heights again, or, you know, they didn't, it wasn't just an upward trajectory the whole time. And, you know, for me specifically, this is rare to be this positive about somebody after just 1 year, regardless of how good it was. But, I think I'm being pretty objective in saying what does he need to do to work on, other than just, like, you know, whether you're Tom Brady or any other quarterback, you always want to improve over the course of your career, whatever that may be, but it's the incremental stuff, or it's, you know, fine tuning something you're already pretty good at. Now you're making it better, as opposed to, well, he threw 23 interceptions or he took an insane amount of sacks. You know, the Sam Howell year, the offensive line wasn't great, but he was also holding onto the ball a bit, and that was leading to the sacks, or, you know, he's taking too many hits or whatever it might be. There was nothing that's that glaring. I mean, I don't think that the staff would disagree with that. So based on that, and then factor in his demeanor, he isn't, you know, he didn't, if he's ever going to run around and have, you know, an off season where he is, you know, yelling like he's DiCaprio in Titanic, I'm the king of the world. I mean, this would have been a pretty good one to do it in. He's getting all the accolades, all the hype, he's, you know, award shows, whatever. And yet he still, from all accounts, was the guy that was still football focused, you know, pretty much all off season. And, you know, that's, of course, ideal. If your hardest worker is your best player, you can't have a better scenario than that. So that's why it's, like, hard to see some major downturn. Again, will he ever be an MVP or the best quarterback in the league? You know, that's we'll have to see on those kinds of matters. But in terms of being a highly productive player who's a difference maker, I don't see how this is going to go wrong outside of the unforeseen.
All right, so a friend of mine just texted me and said that, do you have the whole sound thing with Wale and Cam Newton, Max?
Yeah, I've got the whole thing.
Because he said that apparently he talked about RG3 before the Seattle playoff game or something like that. Is that in there?
He does. Yeah, he does bring up RG3.
All right, let me hear it.
Here, Jaden Daniels could be a potential one-hit wonder.
Nah.
What makes him different?
I think he loves the game too much.
But speak to me like from a D&B.
He loves the game too much. You know, you got people that don't love the game. Mm-hmm. They love what comes with the game. That boy loves the game. Like, he just loves the game. Like,
seen a lot of success as a rookie season.
I worry about that with our most like CJ struggled a little bit the second year, but the line was a little.
But you know. I'm gonna say it in this way. There's nobody who had the game in a chokehold like Robert Griffin III. but RG3, bro, I have to tip my hat to him.
One of the GOAT rookie seasons of all time.
No, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I see that same thing happening for Jaden, and as you know, being in that community, do you fear that?
I mean, I think you always fear, like, we got PTSD of not winning for so long. So it's like we don't even know how to have good things. We don't know what it's like to be, like, having 5 primetime games this year. Like, we don't know. Like, so it's like there's a reason why, you know what I'm saying? And this is the kid from LSU. But so we like, damn, like, okay, when is the honeymoon over? Like, you know what I'm saying? It's easy to think like that, but I got to believe in, like, you know, the new organization and new GM. You know, they got plans for the new stadium. So, like, we're going in the right direction. We're trying to right them wrongs from all them years.
That's interesting. By the way, I think everybody understands that last part, why people who are, you know, hesitant to say it's different now are hesitant. I mean, after what we went through for 24 years. The beginning of that answer, he loves the game too much, and then, you know, for all intents and purposes, implied that RG3 was one of those that, you know, loved what came with the game more than the game itself. But, you know, and Ben, I'll let you answer it afterwards. I've said this going back to, you know, the build-up to the draft. There's a massive difference between RG3 and Jaden Daniels on the field. Wale hit on the differences off the field. And, you know, there was a time in which we thought RG3 was incredibly special and committed and easy, you know, off the field as well. It didn't turn out that way. I don't know. I would bet that it turns out to be much better with sort of his overall commitment to team, commitment to the game, you know, a level of self-awareness, all of that. But on the field, these are two totally different players coming into the game. I mean, we've already talked about the difference between Jaden Daniels and Lamar Jackson, you know, early in their careers. Jaden Daniels came into the NFL as a polished pocket passer. And we saw that at every turn last year. RG3 was just a pile of clay who didn't have any clue how to be a pocket passer, which is precisely why Mike and Kyle implemented the offense that they implemented in 2012, because he would not have been able to get on the field without it, because he was so ill-prepared to be a 3rd-and-10 dropback passer. Massive difference between the two players and their ability to throw the football from the pocket when you have to throw the football from the pocket. RG3 couldn't do it. Now, it's possible that he would have developed into that had he stayed healthy. And I've said this a million times, ironically, he had the best head coach and the best offensive coordinator to develop the best that he could provide as a pocket passer. And of course, he ran them out of town after the second season. But no, big difference on the field between the two players. Massive difference. I think the differences off the field are massive, too. But go ahead, Ben.
Yeah, well, I mean, two things. One, we all understand the comparisons, especially from the outside people. But RG3 was, you know, hurt. He hurt his knee twice before the season ended. So he was going into the next season about off of an injury, and that was a massive deal. And then the all-in for week one nonsense, which was a campaign ad that morphed into an organizational ethos, or felt like that was, this, to me, one of the first signs of, wait, what's going on here? What is this nonsense? And we've seen none of that from Jaden to any type of, you know, hiccup with the messaging or how he presents himself. But then also, lastly, it is the massive aspect is the organization itself. Like, obviously, Jaden Daniels being a quarterback is going to get, you know, people can say what they want, he's going to get some level of preferential treatment over time from ownership on down. But at the same point, the structure here is just significantly better than the nonsense you had before, where, you know, you said that he ran the Shanahans out of town. Well, in part because he, you know, he had the ear of the owner directly.
Yeah, he reported to the owner more than he did his head coach. Yes.
Right, and this was always part of the problem with the whole organization, you know, over time. So, you know, I don't think that's going to happen here. You know,
you know,
5 years from now, what do I know? But, like, today, I don't see that happening on any level. And not that Jaden would even want to do that, but, like, so when just the organizational setup that you have is just so substantially better. And look, I mean, the Shanahans were feuding with Snyder. It wasn't just like a one-way thing. So it was just contentious all the way around. And here it's all kumbaya at this point. So
right, they were feuding over the way RG3 was being handled by the owner primarily. Yeah, no, everything you said is true. And let me just add back to sort of the football comparison. Not only was he so much more advanced coming into the league as a passer and as a pocket passer, the truth is he's just a much better runner. You know, RG3 had great speed and was explosive, but remember the terribly awkward hits he took because he did not have great open field vision, which Jaden does have. There are just massive differences between the two players. So in that soundbite, Max, there wasn't anything about something that Wale said RG3 told him before the playoff game?
No, I'm feverishly trying to find that audio. But
a friend of mine said that that Wale said something that RG3 called him the night before the game to say, you know, he wasn't healthy and they've got too many running plays involved or something like that. Is that what he said, Ben?
That's what I heard. Again, obviously take it for what it's worth, but the game plan was as if he was healthy, and RG3 was supposedly telling Wale, you know, he's not so sure about that. And, yeah, that's a fair, you know, critique, if you know, in the sense of like, why, you know, you got to protect him at all costs. But, you know, is what it is. By the way, we spent, you know, time last year discussing whether Jaden Daniels knows how to slide, which was a largely waste of time. RG3 did not know how to slide.
No, he didn't.
Like that. He, you know, Jaden is largely, obviously he got banged up at one point during the season, but he largely, you know, showed the ability to, you know, get away, get down, avoid the hit. And RG3 basically was straight line speed for the most part. Like, he's a track guy. And, you know, obviously it was very impressive, but there's less wiggle there, and he didn't know how to get down. So that's another difference.
Yeah, you know, going back to, you know, we've litigated and relitigated over and over, you know, for the last 12 years on this at various times. But, you know, the bottom line is heading into that Philadelphia game, Mike, you know, had shared with Tommy and I back in 2015, we were very clear that if he was hurt and wasn't going to be able to run the offense that we had run, that Kirk was going to play because they could not win if they only had him available to hand the ball off and then throw from the pocket. And, you know, they thought that at times during down the stretch, he was exaggerating the injuries so that they wouldn't run read option or that zone read because Kirk didn't run it in the Cleveland game. But he ended up having a big game against the Cowboys heading into the postseason as a runner. I mean, Alfred Morris had the big game, but he had a really good game. And so, not to mention, we know that, you know, from the NFL film stuff, he was not totally honest during the game about the state of his knee. So many people will say you had to be blind not to know that he was hurt. He should have never played. That's fine. We just saw Tyrese Halliburton out in game 7 with an injury that definitely could lead to something catastrophic, which it ultimately did. These are competitors. These are the highest levels of the sport, and they weren't being truthful about the injury, including in game, where Dr. Beanie Cap said it was the brace that was making him look awkward, not the knee himself. Anyway, what else? What else do you want to talk about?
Well, I don't know what else there is with the Commanders. I continue to be. It is wild to see that the Commanders and the Wizards are simultaneously having a rebirth from a functional standpoint, that, you know, both of these franchises, you know, for years were making just, you know, in different ways, you know, poor decisions that were always sort of short term without any of the vision. And you know, the Commanders showed they've got longer term vision with what they've done so far. And the Wizards, you know, acquiring one young guy after another. And, you know, we'll see if any of them pan out. But
yeah,
you got to take swings. You got to get upside. You got to get hope. And they had none of that a couple years ago. And now you've got, you know, nine guys who were drafted in the last 3 years. And, you know, we'll see. I've you know, long way to go, but I like the path that they're on, since you mentioned it at the top.
Yeah, I'm totally with you on that. With that said, they've won 15 and 18 games, and they're probably going to not win a whole hell of a lot of games next year. They better not, because their pick is protected for top nine, I believe. And we'll see. They just have to land on, you know, a truly great player and another one to two really, really good players. And we'll find out if they land on those players. But we know that they're doing it the right way, and I agree with that. Thank you. I'll talk to you on Friday.
Of course, man. See ya.
All right. My thoughts on what the Wizards did over the weekend, trading for Cam Whitmore in a deal with the Houston Rockets, when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.